Welcome to The Wild Show with your hosts, Will Chang, Lee Chang, and Andrew Su. Hi, this is Will Chang, and I have Evan here with me today. This is our fourth experiment. So far, so good. I mean, we still suck as people talking on a podcast, but we've had people reach out to us to say that they've listened to this. Julian, for example, said this is the first podcast episode that he's of mine after 70 episodes that he actually listened through all the way through.
Yeah. We have some fans.
Yeah. Thank you, Had Matter, for reaching out to and talking about these episodes. And we actually got hit up by Annie Mocha Brands because we were talking about the K-pop stuff and they wanted to meet up. So, I mean, it's pretty nice to get recognized that we're actually having some good, interesting, thought-provoking content with these like weekly interviews, or not like weekly podcast episodes.
Yeah, please keep reaching out if you guys have any kind of feedback, or, you know, if you want to tell us how awesome of a job we're doing. we love the feedback, and it helps us figure out, you know, how we should kind of gear our discussions and everything. But Will, I know you have a lot to talk about today, so let's get started. Let's hear some of these thoughts that have been keeping you up at night.
Yeah, I woke up at like 5 a.m. today. So excited to be on this podcast that it's like 9:30 right now. It's been 4 hours. I'm just waiting for you to come on so we could talk about it. The first thing I wanted to actually cover was Mad Hatter reached out to me because we had just did last week's interview, like last week's episode on the prep before buying the Yuga Labs Other Deeds Bored Apes land. And then it happened the day after the whole like buying land fiasco. And Mad Hatter had basically asked me if I wanted to cover it, if I was going to cover it.
Who is Mad Hatter, by the way?
She's a librarian from Crypto Coven. Okay. And she's been like really amazing in sharing a lot of our episodes with the Coven. And so I've always had like a lot of cool discussions with her. She they are working on like a Crypto Cats NFT. And so we were just discussing some of that. Since last week, my task was to use my KYC wallet to buy land, Bored Ape land for the DAO, right? And so just a quick setup, I had gotten a whitelist, and these whitelists are pretty valuable, right? You had to actually KYC, which is verify your identification early on, and they didn't tell you what it was. And then finally, when it came out, okay, this wallet where you're basically verified your identification, it allows you to buy this land. And so these were pretty scarce resources. It was pretty valuable, and everyone that had whitelisted was really excited they had the opportunity to buy land. Now, we have this investment DAO, and it's kind of like a mess because it's so decentralized. No one really can make decisions on how to buy valuable NFTs or even how to figure out whether or not things are going to go up, or, you know, just making decisions. So I was like, okay, I have this land, Bored Ape. I have this opportunity to buy land. Bored Apes generally are going to hold their value because of the brand. And so I'll give my whitelist to the DAO, right? As the time was getting closer, I started to feel more and more greed. Like, I was like, oh man, because I had these spots and I knew that most likely if I buy them, it's going to go up in value. And I was like, oh man, I'm having this crazy conflict of whether or not I should buy it for myself or buy it for the DAO. So I had to basically make it clear to myself and to the DAO. I was like, hey, I'm having these conflicts right now. It's feeling really weird. So I'm just going to say it out loud and say, I'm hoping that I can set an example for the DAO so that everyone kind of feels the same way and can set this culture, right? Because there's a lot of my friends are in this DAO. And then also, hopefully, I can become friends with other people that don't know in this DAO. And so yeah. I'm going to set an example.
Thanks for being transparent with that, by the way. And, yeah. You know, setting this kind of precedent for everyone to follow.
Yeah, I mean, I had to say it out loud, right? Because if I didn't say it out loud, then I might have gone back on my work, like my thoughts.
Your greed would have consumed you.
Yeah, my greed would have consumed me. So, okay, how does it work? Yuga Labs came out with this setup where basically for the first 12 hours, you have this buffer period where you can sign the contract to actually allow you to mint, right? And so that part of it was not actually during the mint. You could do it beforehand. So you have 12 hours to do that. They listed the price. Okay. They were like, fuck Dutch auctions. They're like, we're going to make it way more fair. Dutch auctions are exploitative. So we're going to make it so that it's all land is going to be 310 ape, right? Everyone has the right to buy two first. And then once the gas fees reduce, then there's another way where you can buy four more. And then there's another way, like basically like it allows everyone to buy two first before opening it up for four more and then opening up in waves, right?
And then as an owner of a Bored Ape or a Mune Ape, you also got airdropped a piece of land as
yeah,
well,
so
right?
So the airdrop happens later. Like it doesn't happen during the mint. Like after the next day, they open up to Bored Apes and you can basically get an airdrop by connecting your wallet, right? But this happens afterwards. So I prepared, right? I was like, okay, I'm going to basically get six, like eight, I'm going to get enough ape coins where I can buy six, right? Because I can probably get into the first wave. And then if I get into the second wave, I can buy four more, right? One of the issues with ApeCoin though, is as people were trying to buy Ape, it went higher and higher and higher. So it started like maybe like 12 or 13 ETH, or sorry, $12 or $13 per ApeCoin. And then over time, as it gotten closer and closer to buying land, it went up always like $24, right? And so if you had bought ApeCoin at $24, that's actually like a huge risk, right? So like instead of having the DAO buy the ApeCoin, I was like, I had some ApeCoin, so I'm just gonna lend it to the DAO, right? And so I have my own ApeCoins in my own wallet waiting for me to buy this land that could potentially go up to give to the DAO. So I was like there's like this tension, right? So what happens? I had already, within that 12-hour grace period, I already signed up to get ready to buy these lands. And it opens up at 6 p.m. And before it opened up, I was like, all right, I don't have a lot of liquidity. I have maybe like 0.6 ETH right now, which is like maybe like $1,000, maybe $1,500 that I can use to mint, right? I might not be able to mint the other four lands because the gas prices might be more competitive, but at least I'll probably be able to mint the first two because it sounds like Bored Ape and Yuga Labs have kind of figured it out, right? And so I started talking to people and they were like, hey, like, I was like, do you think I need more gas? And then everyone's like, you might need more gas. And I was like, 0.6 is a lot already. So I don't really want to borrow it. I think I can just try. I'm not going to be greedy. I'm just going to mint the first two with 0.6 and then not try to get the four, three, four, five, and six, right? And so the mint starts at 6 p.m. I'm driving. We're like, Claudine has COVID. And so we're not going out. We're just driving around LA. We ended up going to Calabasas where Kanye and Kim Kardashian live. We were looking at like $30 million like houses on Redfin and trying to drive into their neighborhoods. We were like trying to get into the gate. So I'm like, we're like maybe 10 cars back trying to get into the gate where all the $30 million houses are. And while we were doing that, I was basically trying to mint these lands, right? And so I open it, I mint it. I press the mint button and it's like 2 ETH gas, right? This is like the first 200 other deed lands being minted already. It tells you there's 55,200 have been minted. So I'm like, okay, maybe it's going to be crazy right now. So what 2 ETH, what it means is usually it costs maybe 0.05, 0.1 at the most to mint something, right? But because everyone at the same time is trying to mint, people are pushing up the gas fees, kind of like surge pricing for Uber. So everyone's competing against each other. The network is clogged and people are overpaying for to get minted, right? So everyone's kind of scared that it's going to run out in the beginning. So people are just pushing up the price. So it's two ETH right now to buy a land. And I'm like, it's not possible. Like I don't even have two ETH. And so I'm just going to wait until it settles down because we have enough time. If they're giving two lands to each person, then we definitely have enough time, right? And so I wait 30 minutes and 10,000 have been sold out of 55,000. And I'm like, all right, so it's still two ETH, right? And so, okay, I wait an hour and a half and it's like half of them have been sold and it's like two ETH still. And I'm starting to get worried, right? Because it's not only, if it might've been me, I might have not maybe minted, but at this point I've already told everyone I'm going to mint for the DAO and I don't
have a lot of responsibility.
I had a lot of responsibility already.
And the FOMO was probably slowly kicking in.
Yeah, the FOMO is kicking in. So we're like 25,000 out of 55,000 right now. And I can't afford it because I don't have enough gas. And so I started telling people like, hey, this is where it's at right now. What should I do? And then so the DAO made a decision where, okay, we're going to use the DAO funds to send me ETH. So at least if they're starting to run out, then I'll be able to buy one, right? So then the DAO goes through this decision-making process and they end up signing 3 out of 5, sending me the two ETH, but it gets stuck. First of all, it costs 0.3 ETH just to transfer. Usually it costs like 0.03 or something like that, right? But 0.003 almost, right? But now it costs 0.3 because the entire thing is clogged. And yeah, so it's stuck, right? And I'm not getting it. And so what ended up happening is one of the leader of the DAO, Justin, he ends up sending personally 2 ETH to me and paying a lot of very high gas fees, right? So I finally have the gas fees and I'm still waiting for the gas fees to go down. It's like 35,000 is done. 40,000, okay, I gotta buy one. And by I get to like 45,000 on a mint one, and finally mint one. And it turns out the entire thing, like all the way up to 55,000 land went minted, all of them was at 2 ETH gas, right? And so the gas war happened the entire time and everybody was really upset because there are so many projects that have done such a great job in figuring out how to reduce these gas fees for their users, right? And Yugo Labs, the top project with loads of money that have been in the game for a really long time, didn't do anything to stop that from happening, right?
I think people spent, I saw some tweets about how the total amount of transaction fees spent for this whole entire land sale was around $100 million just for transaction fees.
Yeah, all lost, right?
Yeah.
And while this is happening, there's this Twitter account called Kobe. He's like a really old, like traditional crypto guy who has been around for a long time. He's like a degen trader. And he suggested, maybe out of joke, but maybe for real, he suggested like Yugo Labs should create their own ape coin like system, right? So instead of using ERC-20 on the Ethereum blockchain, they should create their own blockchain. And then after this whole fiasco happened, Yugo Labs came out with an apology. And part of their apology actually said the same thing as Kobe, which is, I'm just going to read it off. "We're sorry for turning off the lights on Ethereum for a while. It seems abundantly clear that ApeCoin will need to migrate to its own chain in order to properly scale. We'd like to encourage the DAO to start thinking in this direction." That's crazy, right? Like a lot of people think that they had already planned this to make it such a mess that it'll convince enough people to actually move off of Ethereum onto their own blockchain. It could be like conspiracy theorist-ish, but based on their language and based on kind of their PR, it really feels like it was planned.
Like a go-to-market strategy?
Yeah.
Interesting.
And they blamed Ethereum too, right? And it wasn't Ethereum's fault. It was just basically Ethereum, when there's congested traffic, there's surge pricing, right? But they could easily have figured out how to reduce the surge pricing from different things. Like Moonbirds has done this thing where there's like a raffle. There's a bunch of different ways of doing it, but Yugo Labs didn't do any of those things. Okay. So what did I start thinking about when this all happened, right? First of all, there's like incredible centralization happening with Yuga Labs. If you think about what's happening in the entire ecosystem of Bored Apes, so you have four companies all working together. You have Yuga Labs, which is Bored Ape, and then you have MoonPay. MoonPay is in charge of getting all the celebrities into Bored Apes, right? So MoonPay is almost a consulting service that buys Bored Apes or buys like assets for people and then actually gives it to them or sells it to them. And so MoonPay has always been the person that every time there's a new like celebrity that comes onto Bored Apes, MoonPay is the one actually responsible for that, right? And then you have Improbable, which is the company, the gaming company that's running Other Deeds, which is the game that Bored Ape is doing, right? The other side. They're like a metaverse company that can do like 10,000 users at one time for like kind of like a concert, right? Similar to like what Fortnite does, but they have like 10,000 concurrent users can all be in. And they're basically building out this other side world. And then you have OpenSea, which is like buying and selling NFTs, right? All four of those companies are working together to build this like ecosystem out. All of them are A16Z companies, right? So not only are they A16 companies, but they're also Guy Osiri companies. You're from the music industry. You know who Guy Osiri is?
I do know who Guy Osiri is. We actually had an opportunity to pitch to Sound Ventures like a while back, but you know, please explain to everyone who Guy Osiri is, because I saw.
Yeah, so I had no idea. Yeah, I had no idea who he was. I didn't know anything about him. I didn't know he existed for like a week ago. But it wasn't until I had a call with a friend, Jason, who is in like Hollywood, and he was explaining to me how connected he was. I did a bunch of research on him. All right, so Guy Osiri is a talent manager, like a music talent manager. He started out as a 17-year-old at Madonna's record label called Maverick. And over time, he rose up and eventually became friends with Madonna and started managing him. And like, he's a person in charge of negotiating like an unprecedented $120 million 360 deal with Live Nation.
And this is really crazy, because I think this was he pioneered this concept of these 360 deals, these massive 360 deals to acquire basically an artist worldwide touring rights. So he did this with Madonna, and I think he also did this with a few other artists as well, like Jay-Z. Basically all the top name artists have these massive deals with Live Nation, where Live Nation owns the worldwide touring rights and also gets like a cut of all these different types of revenue streams that they bring in from the concerts.
Yeah, and so not only did he do these 360 deals, but he also, I think Madonna has had the highest grossing concerts of all time. He's the one that basically is behind those. He managed her while all that happened. He also became U2's manager, and he ended up selling both Maverick, which is Madonna's record label, and U2's management company to Live Nation for like $30 million. He was the manager for Red Hot Chili Peppers. He was the manager for Amy Schumer. He also started a VC firm. Like, his first one was with Ashton Kutcher, and they invested in companies like Airbnb, Foursquare, Shazam, SoundCloud, Spotify, Uber. So like legit VC. And then 3 years later, he started another venture with Ashton Kutcher. And you were talking about Sound Ventures. Yeah, that was the company's name. And then going back to all this, they basically, Sound Ventures invested in MoonPay, Improbable, and OpenSea. And Guy Siri is now signed on as a representation for Yuga Labs, Bored Apes, and also World of Women.
Wow.
So he's the man behind all of this. Isn't that crazy?
He's like the wizard in the Wizard of Oz.
Yeah.
Or is he the wizard, or is A16 the wizard, actually?
I mean, who's
orchestrating a lot of the momentum within Web3 and even creating the narrative behind Web3.
Yeah, so I mean, I feel like A16Z probably has like the tech pull, right? Like from a technology side. And then Gaio Siri probably has the clout pull from like an influencer, music, entertainment, that side of it, the hype pull, right? And so I think both of them work together to create this like centralized ecosystem. And it's funny too, because Chris Dixon from AC&Z is all about, you know, decentralization, but AC&Z is really centralizing everything.
Yeah. I mean, I think we were talking about this where when you first started your podcast, you were kind of at the peripheral of Web3. But as you interviewed more people and you peeled back the layers, really what's at the center is just another massive VC firm kind of propelling everything forward.
Yeah. And then, so I woke up this morning and I was just thinking about I got the land, right? But the land was the land, this is a lottery system, and the land that I got, the two ones I bought for the DAO, I mean, they're like floor ones. And I think Bored Ape or Yuga Labs kind of messed up the execution so bad that a lot of people have lost faith a little bit. And so the floor of the land has gotten devalued. The ones that got codas, which is those like koala, like PFP things, they're very valuable. But anything else, they're not that valuable, because just people kind of have, at least at this moment, the faith has been a little bit lost. Right?
Well, the land also had different creative licensing rights, right? Like I remember reading something where the land NFT that you bought didn't have the same creative licensing rights that Bored Ape Yacht, like the original Bored Apes had. They were way more restrictive in what you could actually do with it. Yeah,
so I think that happened. I do know that someone pointed it out to one of the Bored Ape founders, I think Goner, I forgot his name. And then he said, yeah, we're fixing that around, at least with codas at least.
Oh, okay. So this is actually something that's fluid and they're changing it.
Yeah, I think
due to the community.
Yeah. So okay. What actually happened, right? So Yuga Labs, I don't even know if they actually were the ones that created the land, but there's a company, maybe Animoca, maybe Improbable Games, but they created this like world, and there's at the center of it is the Bored Ape Yacht Club, where the clubhouse, right? And then as you go out, there's like a middle piece that's Bored Ape, like Bored Ape only, that can mint, right? And so the ones that are closer to the clubhouse are the ones, 2, 3, 4, and it goes all the way to like 10,000, right? Because you have 10,000. So my number is like 9,058. So I'm like the edge of like the outside, like of the Bored Ape like land. And then if you go further out, it's the Mutant Ape land, right? And then you go further out, it's the other people that minted land without the Bored Ape or the Mutant, right? And so the two that I got for the DAO is like way on the edges, like out, like not even close to the clubhouse. And then I minted one for the Bored Ape, which is on the edge, right? And it makes sense. I understand why they're doing it, because they're, you know, rewarding the believers that have been with them the longest. They're rewarding the people that are, you know, pushing the story for them and defending them and giving them special rights and privileges. But as I've been thinking about it, what they're really recreating is feudalism. And feudalism, you know, feudalism is basically you have a king, and the king gives them like their people land. They give them the most loyal people the best land, and then these people make money off of the land by having servants or vestiges or just like peasants that are basically farming the land. And then whenever like trouble happens, the king can call on their army. Nobles, yeah, to raise an army to defend them, right? That's feudalism. That feels a lot like what this is, right? And so when some people start talking shit about Yuga Labs, you have all these Bored Apes coming out and basically protecting them, protecting their brand, because everyone has vested interest now.
Is this a bad thing, though? Isn't this, in a way, what community-driven is? You have to reward your original community, give them benefits for believing in your project, being an early investor in your project, and then also the benefits of having this kind of really strong community fandom is they will come out and basically defend you against any types of attacks, and maybe even create different theories. Like maybe Yuga Labs really did just fuck up on their smart contract and, you know, create this whole entire gas situation. But then because they had such a strong community following, you know, their community came out and were able to kind of take all these different thoughts and spin it into this giant conspiracy theory. It's like, oh, wait, guys, this is actually 4D chess here. It was all planned from the beginning. This is what they're actually trying to do. And then Yuga Labs can basically take that theory and just run with it and be like, oh, yeah, we're actually creating our own blockchain. So this is all some kind of master plan that we created from the beginning.
Yeah, no, I mean, that totally makes sense, right? But at the same time, like, there's this whole like narrative around ownership and like decentralization, and, you know, anybody can come in and be part of the ecosystem, right? But as we're seeing, as the ecosystem becomes more and more valuable, it's impossible to get in. Let's talk about the land, for example. There's so many people that wanted a piece of the land that saved up so much money to get that 310 ape, right? And then when they try to mint it, they didn't have the 2 ETH to actually mint it. And so who actually gets to participate in this ecosystem? It's the people that already had the Bored Apes, or it's the people that have the money to basically buy it in over other people, right? It's not a fair ecosystem at this point. And anybody that wanted to get in cannot get in now because of the way it's all set up.
This is more of a symptom of the broader industry as a whole, though, right? It's not something that just applies to Yuga Labs. You could say the same thing about Zoogies or Doodles. I mean, the price is so high that anyone just, you know, kind of interested in NFTs that wants to own a blue chip project, you know, they're definitely priced out. And it's not just, even thinking further back on it, it doesn't just apply to NFTs. It applies to basically any hot crypto project. In order to get in early, you really have to have the right alpha that probably isn't existent on Twitter in order to really be able to capitalize in the beginning. And as the price goes up, other people pile in. And these are the people that, you know, probably end up becoming bag holders because the price has already risen so high.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't just apply to NFT projects, but it applies to just governance in general, right? There's this really amazing like YouTube video called Rules for Rulers that I love, that I try to show everybody. It's by CPG Gray, I think is the name. And it talks about how rulers, either authoritarians, dictators, or how democratic leaders keep their power. And it's all about controlling the keys to power and rewarding them, right? Even if you're in a democracy, it's all about having the like rewarding the keys to power, right? And if you have something that like you want to continue to rule, you have to basically reward your people,
constituents.
Constituents, right? Yeah. And so, I mean, that's just how it is. I think that's human nature. And this whole like shift in this narrative in terms of like, it's kind of like, it's impossible almost, right? The reason why it's possible now is because there's an open field where nothing is created yet. And so anybody part of the beginning of the creation can become a constituent. But the later and later stages it gets, it's harder to get into you know what I mean? That's the same with anything. That's the same with companies, everything like that. And so, all right. So what does this all mean? There's a lot, actually. One of the things I want to talk about too, because we started discussing a lot of this stuff in the DAO, and the DAO actually asked me to come up with an NFT blue chip scorecard. And so I wanted to talk about like my thought process in terms of identifying blue chips, the scorecard, and just basically kind of the results of my conclusions, right? So let's start out with what I think a blue chip is. And so what I'm understanding now is there's a huge separation between blue chip NFTs and blue chip. What blue chip means is, like, you know, like in a stock market, there's like blue chip stocks, right? Google, Facebook, things that have like value that aren't going to move around very much, but they're really like stable. And then you have like just regular stocks. So what does a blue chip in NFTs mean? They're the like high value, that like high value NFTs that aren't going to basically go anywhere, right? And so some people think, you know, Azuki is one, Doodles is one, Artifact is one, Bored Apes is one, right? So we're starting to see blue chip separation from those types of projects to just normal projects. And so the reason why we're starting to see separation is because, not because of like the mechanics, right? Bored Ape, Azuki have shown different airdrop mechanics, but even if a new project is just copying those types of roadmaps or those types of airdrop mechanics, none of that matters. What really matters is the story and the brand. That brand that people believe in and that story that people believe in creates the blue chip, right? And as the value of that blue chip goes higher, a lot of people get priced out of the ecosystem. And so when something like there's an airdrop that happens, people want to be a part of that ecosystem. So they're willing to buy that airdrop at a lower price. And that basically pushes up the value of those airdrops. And so what ends up happening is a blue chip is an asset that will continually give you more revenue generating assets because the brand is so strong, right? The difference between a blue chip and a regular project, for example, is that if a regular project that didn't have that story that people believed in and they generated a bunch of airdrop NFT assets, because the demand isn't there, there's actually way more supply, right? So what ends up happening is actually the entire value of even the original NFTs come down. And so that's what I think about a blue chip. And so how do you think about like what is a blue chip and what is not? Like what are the variables there that make sense to me that I should ask myself, right? So this is the scorecard that I gave the DAO. Number one, is there a story that people gravitate towards that attracts talent, right? So when Bored Ape first came out, NFTs weren't really a thing yet. CryptoPunks was there. All the Bored Apes were pretty late to CryptoPunks. And so they're like, okay, let's create our own CryptoPunks and let's try to flip CryptoPunks and we're all going to make it, right? That was like early times of Bored Apes, but that was what people like gravitated towards. Azuki is where the skaters in the internet. Doodles is like all about artsy vibes. I think like Moonbirds is just, we trust in Kevin Rose, right? So that's the story that people gravitate around. Number two is, so they have charismatic leaders with proven execution ability, right? And so are they able to instill trust in creating this world that people can build on top of? Are they innovative and talented enough where talented people want to come and help build this world out? And are they like under-promising and over-delivering so that basically people are just surprised with joy whenever something comes out, right?
I think number two is really important, especially in crypto. Having a charismatic leader for your project can take it so far. For example, you can see it like non-NFT examples would maybe be like Do Kwon for Terra Luna, or even who's the guy that was in charge of Time Wonderland? Daniel Sesta, I think. He was a really charismatic leader who basically built a movement around all of his DeFi products with memes, and even Andre Kronig with a lot of his DeFi products. So yeah, I think number two is very important in the world of Web3.
Yeah, I mean, even Vitalik is pretty, even though he's kind of really weird, but he's also very charismatic.
In his own way, he's very charismatic.
Yeah. Yeah. And everyone just loves him. Yeah, totally. So yeah, charismatic leaders. The third one is, are they able to attract talented evangelists or apostles, basically, that are building the ecosystem and making the story real, right? So like, are the community members building lore? Are they building art? Are they building comic books? Are they making podcasts? Are they building out this world alongside the project to basically make it fuller and make it have more heart, right? And make it meaningful. Number four, is there a ritual to signify a sense of belonging? So, I mean, what I'm actually really describing right now is a religion. So are all these components going to make it a religion, right? Are there rituals to signify a sense of belonging? I mean, it's like the language, it's the like in real person events. It's all these different things. Like, do you feel like you belong because you know all the vernacular and things that make that community what it is, right? The fifth one is, do the believers have money, right? And so I think there's a lot of projects out there that have a lot of these elements, but the audience or the demand isn't there yet. Whether it's because that audience, not a lot of people are in crypto, or maybe the audience right now don't have the money right now to basically hold it, right? So another good way of thinking about it as well is like, okay, do they have the money to actually really hold the value? And the last one is Yuga Labs and Bored Apes has like shown that there's this possibility to create this enormous ecosystem where NFTs are in the middle. Are there any other projects? Is this project, do they have the talent from a leadership perspective and from a community perspective to really create this ecosystem that Yuga Labs has set precedence for? And so those are all the things I think about when you should evaluate whether or not something in the blue chip or not. What do you think?
No, yeah, I agree with all of them. And, you know, I think a lot of them, it doesn't just apply to, like you said, it's kind of like a religion. It doesn't just apply to Web3. You can apply it to like, I guess, Web2 or any amazing companies, right? Charismatic leader, maybe like Steve Jobs or something like that. Do the believers have money? Well, everyone that were early fans of Apple, they were mostly more, higher up on the social economic chain. They were like techies and stuff that could afford to pay out for the Apple brandy. They had really strong believers in the Apple brand. They were like kind of religious zealots that would go out and like talk shit about like Android or like PCs and everything. So all the things that you listed out are kind of just ways to create an organization that humans naturally gravitate to. And it's worked out over and over and over again, throughout the history of like the human species, I guess. So I think all of them are correct.
Yeah. And the crazy thing is just, it all starts out with a story, and that all it is just a story. And then that story, basically as that one person with a story, you start collecting things. You start collecting capital from investors. You start collecting people that like believers that are users. You start collecting people that are marketing or brand ambassadors for you. And over time, you start building it and making something real, right? But yeah, it all starts with a story.
I mean, winners want to hang out with other winners, right? So if your project has early success, you're going to naturally be able to attract more winners, whether it be, board seats, advisors, top VCs, influencers within the space. And that creates this flywheel for eventual success for your product.
Yeah. And then, so it's like layers, right? You're basically like, let's say when a product first starts out, you're building like a base layer of value. You're building a house of cards, right? And you're basically building a base layer where, okay, the mint price is like 0.08 ETH or something like that. And there's like a foundation to it. And because of the way you built that foundation layer, people are like, okay, let's build. Okay, I'm willing to go along with the story that we can build on a second layer, and we can build a third layer. But it's a house of cards, right? And depending on how ambitious the project is, the more flimsy the level is going to be, right? And so all it can take is just basically an accident where someone knocks over a piece. A lot of the layers could fall, right? Mm. And so, especially with NFT projects, where there's really nothing really there other than this like social belief, right? And so, as we're building layers and on top of layers, we can start seeing like how high they can build it. Yuga Labs, for example, yeah.
Oh, I was gonna say, do you think adding on these layers increases it, like, I guess, like systemic risk or like instability or does it kind of make your project more bulletproof, the more layers that you add on? Because right now with Yuga Labs, even with this whole entire, failure to optimize gas for their land sale, even with all the anger that was out there on like Twitter and everything, I don't really see it being able to take it down. I actually can't really imagine, what could kind of really just dent the storytelling or really hurt it to the point where these core believers end up liquidating some of their assets and driving the price down.
I mean, we're seeing it in all other sectors right now, right? There was a story where growth stocks were going to make you a ton of money, right? And then over the last year or 5 months or so, basically growth stocks lost 70 or 80% of their value, right? Mm-hmm. And then because of that story where everyone's like, oh, like everyone can make money and now growth stocks are no longer valued that much, we're seeing that go like cascade through the entire ecosystem. VCs are no longer funding companies at high valuations anymore. Because companies can no longer fund valuation, like companies at that valuation anymore, they're running out of runway, so they're laying off everyone, right? And so like all these companies, these startups are all stories too. And they're also like series A or seed round, series A, series B, series C,
all the way to
IPO. Yeah, right?
Yeah, all the VCs are trying to get in and get their allocation. And
they're just house of cards. And everyone's just basically building layers. And if you fuck up one of them, the house of cards falls down. And it's all around how believable is the story, right? Mm. And so we're seeing that in the startup world. But from an NFT standpoint, like we're starting to see like, yeah, Yuga Labs is super ambitious. There is some like questions around whether or not a game makes sense, land makes sense, if they actually are able to execute outside of just NFTs, but also bring in kind of like the metaverse stuff. Does that make sense? There's a lot of questions around that, right? Nobody knows yet. People are still, okay, you've built this foundation that we believe you, and so we trust you still. But it's still, but then the trust is a little bit like different, right? Versus before. But that story of Bored Apes has allowed all these other projects to believe too, right? Because everyone looks at Bored Apes like, okay, they built all this tower, House of Cards. We can build this tower too, right? And so an example of that is Azuki. So Azuki came out with Beans. We were talking about last week where like, I don't know if the beans make any sense. They're kind of like weird and ugly, but it could be something like very Asian oriented, like Line Friends, right? And it just recently came out. Actually, the reveal for the beans was actually amazing. They actually did a really good job. I'm really bullish on them. But it also came out that their one of their advisors is the former CEO of Sanrio, responsible for iconic brands like Gropey and Hello Kitty. He's also the strategic officer for a fashion label by Nigo, which is like the Bathing Apes, Japanese fashion brand. And then he's also on the board of Line Corp, which is Line Friends, which we talked about, like little Line characters, right?
Yeah.
And so it makes a ton of sense why they did Beans and what they're doing with Beans, right? And basically, they're creating these little emoji meme things that can basically spread everywhere. And owning a bean allows you to actually own the IP for that specific emoji, right? So there's a credibility there to Azuki. They built another stack of cards. Same thing with Doodles. Just recently, they hired the CEO. I think his name is Julian something. He's the president of Billboard. So he started out in 2012. As the VP for Revenue and Partnerships, and he was in charge of leading a strategic innovation effort to transform Billboard's B2B like catalog into like a digital brand for consumers, a digital music brand. And over time, he was the EVP of partnerships for the like MRC, which is like they acquired Billboard. And so he brought together a bunch of different IPs like Billboard Music Awards, American Music Awards, Ozark, Knives Out, New Year's Rockin' Eve, Golden Globes, and figured out how to monetize them and create partnerships around them. And then he became the president of Billboard, right? And so now with all that like music connections and partnership connections, now he's running Doodles as a CEO, right? And so now that's another stack of cards that makes it really believable, right? And so like, you're seeing all this very interesting stuff in the space that makes some of these blue chip brands very, very believable, and their house of cards is going higher and higher, right? Which is pretty interesting. I actually was talking about, like, I actually wanted, one thing like I wanted to talk about too is like the story that you tell really makes a difference too. The believability of the story, but also how big the story is. So I want to go back to Elon Musk because he's buying Twitter, but basically I think Elon Musk is the best storyteller like we've ever seen, maybe like since Steve Jobs, right? And an example of that is the story around creating a space company. We actually had three rich white men create space companies around the same time. We had Richard Branson, the CEO of Virgin. His story around creating a space company is he wanted to create a fun space tourism company for kind of like skydiving, right? And then yeah, Jeff Bezos creating a space company because since he was very little, he's always wanted to go to space, right? And then you have Elon Musk, who wants to save humanity and create an interplanetary species so we don't all die, right? And so if you were a rocket scientist or if you were an investor, who do you gravitate towards more? Who will get the most money and the most talent to actually make it real, right? Probably Elon Musk. And so I mean, like these NFT projects, these companies, everything just revolves around that big story and getting everyone to believe it. And every house of cards, you have to make it real and make it real and make it real. And hopefully nothing knocks it over. Because we're seeing a lot of house of cards right now knocked over in like startups and in like public companies right now.
Nice. Yeah. I mean, I think that's definitely stories and narratives and memes and all that. It's definitely one of the common themes that we've talked a lot in each of our podcasts, and how these stories have a way of mobilizing a community or a group of people to become, eventually, hopefully become reality. Speaking of stories, an interesting article that I read this week is how a lot of nostalgia brands are reviving themselves to come back with a crypto twist. So I guess, you know, in this way, they're trying to revive a dead story. You know, like a lot of nostalgic IP, they can have a special emotional connection with people. And a lot of these dead brands, they can be revived to get social recognition, attention, and also gain the trust of consumers. So instead of starting a brand from zero, you can actually leverage a dead brand's social capital, target their fan base, and basically become a new community-owned brand in the world of Web3. And this is pretty fascinating. I think we saw it happen to a certain extent with GameStop and AMC, you know, back in like 2020. It drew in a lot of millennials because they're both brands that we recognize from our childhood. And some brands that are starting to do this in the space is LimeWire. Do you remember LimeWire? Downloading free MP3s in college?
My college days.
Yeah. So they just raised $10 million to become a music NFT platform.
Interesting.
Do you remember Radio Shack?
Yeah.
So Radio Shack got acquired by a group called like Retail E-Commerce Ventures in 2020. And they tried to become an e-com brand. But then last year, they pivoted and announced that they're going to become a DeFi product. They're building out a DEX, and their coin is called Radio. And they had a really interesting quote from the CEO. And I'm just going to read the quote. He said, the older generation simply doesn't trust the newfangled ideas of the Bitcoin youth. The need for a bridge between the CEOs who control the world's corporations and the new world of cryptocurrencies will most likely come in the form of a well-known century-old brand. I don't know if I agree with that reasoning behind that, but it's pretty fascinating. There's another one that popped up called, it's a Blockbuster DAO, and they formed with the goal of buying Blockbuster and building a decentralized streaming platform. What's really fascinating about that is the daughter of one of the original founders of Blockbuster is heavily involved with the DAO and kind of trying to push it forward. And another one is MoviePass. I guess they're not really too nostalgic of a brand, but they did get a lot of press and PR, mainly because they failed spectacularly. They haven't really shared too many details about what they're trying to do, but they're trying to revive themselves as kind of like a watch to earn type platform, where when you watch movies on the platform, you're going to be able to earn cryptocurrency. So I thought it'd be cool for us to maybe talk about some brands from our childhood that we feel like might be able to be revived and kind of drive a lot of nostalgia to build a community around it. And for me, I was thinking of MySpace. You know, everyone still remembers Tom from MySpace. They were the OG social media platform, huge, brand name, recognition for millennials, probably Gen Xers, and maybe even some Gen Z. I'm not too sure. Do you remember Zynga?
Yeah.
Zynga could probably be revived as some kind of mirror knockoff. Toys R Us, could we revive that as an NFT platform? Toys R Us has several, they have a lot of characters around it. They had a giraffe guy. I can't remember what his name was. I think they had a few other kind of like cartoonish IP. Troll Dolls. I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah, Troll
that
Dolls.
Went through like a crazy, they have like a Beanie Baby kind of phase.
So, yeah, I mean, Beanie Babies make sense too for that.
Yeah, I mean, how about you? Do you have any ideas? Are there any kind of specific nostalgia, either Web2 brands or even brands from like the 90s that you grew up with, that if they relaunch, it might, maybe you wouldn't invest in it, but it would pique your interest just because of the emotional connection with yourself?
Well, so I think the ones that you came up with are way more innovative than mine, because mine are way more basic. So when you brought that up, I was thinking, okay, Beanie Babies makes the most sense. I was also thinking, I mean, these are probably not dead brands, but like Yu-Gi-Oh! Or Pokemon, like very obvious things, right? But like when you talk about like Zynga and you talk about MySpace, I'm like, man, like those are really smart. So let's work backwards, right? So what's interesting right now, you have music, right? LimeWire, that makes a lot of sense. You have gaming, GameStop, maybe. I don't know, like
GameStop.
Sure.
GameStop is launching an NFT platform. I think with gaming too, I saw some article. Is it Square Enix? Whoever owns the IP for like Tomb Raider and a bunch of those games, I saw they were divesting all of their IP and they're moving straight head on into Web3. DDR, Dance to Earn.
Oh yeah, DDR. DDR. I love DDR. Man, I have a really hard time thinking about my like that long ago. I don't remember what I remember Zynga. I remember LimeWire, but I don't remember anything else.
Are you a nostalgia guy? Maybe because do you feel like you nostalgia hits you at an emotional core, I guess?
I honestly never think about my past. Usually. I don't know. Like I do remember, okay, so I played a lot of Mortal Kombat.
Fight to earn?
Yeah, so I mean maybe it's collecting fighting players. Like I played a lot of Final Fantasy. I think a lot of it was around gaming. I played a lot of Crash Bandicoot or Sonic the Hedgehog. Those types of things. Like there's a lot of character type stuff I think that would be interesting, but I can't think of any platform stuff.
Yeah. I mean for me, MySpace was the most obvious one.
Yeah.
And especially if you could revive it with the same kind of UX. You remember the UX and UI from MySpace? Or even like GeoCities. Do you remember GeoCities? Or like there's another one like Angel something. But if you revive it with the same kind of horrible UX and UI that was just cluttered, I feel like that could have a lot of nostalgia appeal, at least for people to come on and just fuck around and kind of like build on it for a little bit, just to, you know, just to get their fill of memories from their childhood and stuff.
I know we're too old for this, but a lot of people that in Web3 talk a lot about Neopets as their introduction to Web2.
What is Neopets?
It's this learning how, like, it's this website where you can have pets, basically.
Is it like Tamagotchi? Where you have to, like, feed them and try to keep them alive?
Yeah, something like that. I've never played it, but yeah, having Neopets, like having a Pokemon, and then you can kind of code your website to make it look different. And so a lot of people like learn like coding that way, actually. At least the younger generation that are into Web3 have mentioned Web3 a lot. I mentioned Neopets as their introduction to like coding in Web3 a lot. Another thing that I was thinking about was, forgot. I don't remember anymore. Sorry.
Well, I think this would be a cool experiment. Not experiment, but it would be cool to hear back from whoever listens to this episode. What are some Web2 brands or even like 90s brands that you would want to see revived in Web3 or you think would be really cool as a Web3 product? And yeah, I think that'd be cool. You should DM Will or like ping him with any kind of ideas. And maybe for the next episode, we can take one or two of the best ideas and just kind of talk about it.
Yeah, sounds good. Yeah, DM me. My Twitter will be in the description of the podcast.
Cool.
All right, thank you.
That's the episode. Bye.
Bye. Thank you so much for listening until the end. If you've enjoyed this episode, please leave us a review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. It'll help more people like you find us. You can find more about us on wild.show, WLD.SHOW. Please subscribe to our newsletter or DM us on Twitter. We'd love to get to know you.